2, please. It'll be good to see you tonight as we do celebrate Sandra's baptism together. So if you can come and join us, please, please be part of that. So we're continuing with this series called Word to the Wise. And we have a picture up there to remind you. And we're moving on to look at what I've entitled Searching for Satisfaction. Now, if you were here a couple of weeks ago, some of what I'm going to say this morning may sound familiar. But that's not because I've just rewritten my last sermon. It's because actually he's repeating certain things that he's already said. So in his introduction in chapter 1, he begins to unpack a bit more in chapter 2. So if that's the case, if you're sitting there thinking, oh, it sounded like he said that last a couple of weeks ago. Well, I did, but it's probably worth saying again, hopefully. Sometimes scripture and teaching is worth saying a number of times. Let me just remind you a couple of things. There are three sayings particularly that once we get our head around these sayings, Ecclesiastes begins to be less pessimistic, and actually we begin to understand that he's trying to lead us to a place of optimism, actually to a place where God dwells and is able to make sense of our lives. And so the first phrase is this, under the sun or under the heavens. So he's talking, the whole of Ecclesiastes is talking from the perspective of being on earth, looking at earth, looking at life from a human perspective, not considering any heavenly activity, although he does draw in God's activity to some extent, which is pretty good actually, because some of it is fairly heavy negative stuff unless he gets there. And it's almost like he's got to get there to make sense of all this stuff that he's talking about. But on the whole, most of what he is doing is he's speaking from the earth. All that he can see and experience from the earth. And then he uses this phrase that comes up time and time again, meaningless, meaningless. That's how the NIV translates it. And you may remember that I had a kettle here, and I want you to keep in mind, I won't bring the kettle every time, but I want you to keep in mind the kettle. When we boiled the kettle and the steam that we saw coming out of the kettle, that is the meaning of the word. The meaning of meaningless, Hebrew actually is the Hebrew word, is mist. It's steam, it's transient, it is temporary. It doesn't mean it doesn't have a purpose, so that's why meaningless is not a very good translation. What it means is that it is fleeting. It's hard to grasp hold of. It's difficult to grasp hold of. It's there for a while and then gone. And that's actually true of what all Scripture says, that we are here for a moment on life. You know, however great or grand we think we are only here for a moment. And our lives are fleeting, not meaningless, but fleeting. And he wants us to grasp that and understand it because there's a whole load of positive things that flow out of that teaching. And then you may also remember that it was a really hot day actually a couple of Sundays ago. Did you remember that hot day? So we had a couple of fans going, and in fact, I tried to get a fan working that didn't work, which ruined my point, but eventually we found a fan that did, and we blew wind at you. And he uses this phrase, a chasing after a wind, and much of life, he says, is like a chasing after the wind, is trying to catch things, or actually, Eugene Peterson actually describes it as a spitting in the wind. That's one of his translations of one of these verses, is a spitting in the wind, which is not a very pleasant kind of picture to think of. But that's the kind of thing that he's talking about, that actually the wind, trying to chase after the wind and grab hold of the wind is an incredibly difficult, well, actually an impossible thing to do. And many of us are doing that with our lives. And so when he gets to Ecclesiastes 2, the Kohelet, that's his name, the teacher, the preacher, he begins to unpack this in three different ways. And the first one is pleasure, and I want to spend some time talking about pleasure. The second one is understanding, so we'll spend a little time talking about understanding. And the third one is about achievement. I find this book incredibly relevant to us. We live in a culture and a society where we want pleasure. We want to receive pleasure. Am I the only one who wants to receive pleasure? We want to receive pleasure. We like pleasure in our lives. We're also a very driven society, culture, where we want knowledge. We want to know. We want to understand. We think we are very wise. We think we are full of understanding and knowledge. We think, I said this last week, so this is a repetition, a couple of weeks ago, we think that we are the most intelligent generation there has ever been. That's what we think. So he talks about what it is, the chasing after understanding. And then we are a culture, are we not, who want to achieve. We want things in our lives that speak and say, look what we have done. Look at the palaces that we have built. Look at the number of cars that we have, or the number of holidays that we go on. Look at the things that we have achieved in our lives. Is that not true of our culture? I think this is so relevant. It's almost, it feels like he's only written it yesterday for us, this generation. But take heart, folks. Every generation struggles with these things. And I find this very, very applicable. So let's just look, and I'm going to do this as quickly as I can, because we are short of time this morning. But let's look at these three different areas. Pleasure. He says, come now. I like that. He says, come now. Remember, he's talking to students. So you're the students. So he's saying to you, come now. I will test you with pleasure and find what is good. This word, pleasure, in fact, actually is very difficult to translate again. And many of the words that this teacher uses are words that are difficult to translate. The word is simha, simha. And it means actually a sense of well-being, a sense of joyful satisfaction, an attraction to the things that bring us joy and gladness and laughter. Not laughter in the sense of, comedy, with the stuff that we laugh at the TV, but just that sense of your life is good. And I feel good and I'm content. And what he says is he looks at all these things in the world that give us contentment and he builds a new world within a world. Actually, that's how it is described by one of the commentators, that this person builds a world within a world. And so what does he build? He builds houses, he builds vineyards, he builds gardens, he builds parks. It's interesting that the word park is pardes, which actually comes from a Persian word, which is paradises or paradise. It kind of alludes to the Garden of Eden. He's trying to recreate something that God once gave to man, that man would be content and live in pleasure if you want. And so he tries to create these things. He has slaves. So he receives pleasure through material possessions, that's the houses and vineyards and so forth. He has pleasure through wealth, through slaves, through herds, flocks, silver and gold and treasure is accomplished. And then pleasure through leisure. Pleasure through leisure. I mean, we are a society that likes its leisure. And he talks about male and female singers. I'm fascinated that we love a good singer, don't we? On TV nowadays, there are so many programs. You've got the X Factor, you've got The Voice, you've now got The Kid's Voice. Have you seen that? Is it called The Kid's Voice? It is. Thank you, Becky. You're with me. We're together on this. Tim loves it. Tim loves The Kid's Voice. It's so moving. Have you not seen it? Guys, you've got to see it. Some of it is just so moving to see these poor kids so nervous, going out of tune, and then none of them turning round. It's breaking my heart. Turn round, for goodness sake, they're children. Anyway, I've got that off my chest now. So we got all these different programs that we love. There's one about choirs, isn't there, running at the moment as well. We love these, just being entertained by singing. He gets male and female singers. And then he gets this other thing. And here's another word that they find difficult to translate, but a harem. And we think probably what he's talking about is actually sexual pleasure or leisure. And he throws that one in as well. But I've got to say to you that out of all generations, although this is, you know, moves from generation to generation, but our generation is a generation that is running after sexual pleasure in a way that has become incredibly unhealthy to us. But he throws it in there, and it's helpful that he does. I wonder what a modern-day version of this would look like, actually. So I wrote one, and I'm going to read it to you. I undertook great initiatives. I own many homes and several holiday homes. I built for myself a lake and a woodland, as well as a tennis court, a swimming pool, and a hot tub. I purchased many new expensive cars and even refurbished a red old MG Midget, which has become my pride and joy. I travelled the world from sun-swept beaches of the Caribbean to the grand mountains of the Himalayas, to the enchanted safaris of Africa, and to the magnificent rainforests of South America. I developed a business empire that employed many, many members of staff, and eventually I owned many other companies. I own many stocks and shares, and I have accumulated much wealth. There is nothing that I cannot afford. By the way, I'm not talking about myself here, just in case you want. I needed to say that before I get to the next paragraph. I attended many great events, including musical festivals, concerts, opera, and many West End shows. And I attended many top great sports events, including the Football World Cup, the finals at Wimbledon, are you jealous? And the ostentatious Monaco Grand Prix. I became friends with both the rich and the famous. I had many sexual encounters, and I paid for many exotic escorts. Whatever my heart desired, I gave it to myself. Does that sound like our world? Does that sound like a society, a group of people that are running after the wind of pleasure, to somehow find a deep sense of joyful satisfaction in our lives? But sadly, his conclusion, and I think many of us will conclude this, is that this chasing is only fleeting, it's only temporary, it's only passing, it's only brief. All this stuff that we accumulate in our lives, somehow it ends in a place that actually feels like, what was the point? What was the point of all that? And so he comes to the end of pursuing pleasure, and he decides to put that all to one side. And then he says to the student, then what I did is I went after knowledge. I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom and also madness and folly. Wisdom here is, the word is hakmah. And hakmah actually doesn't mean so much kind of being a wise person that people would go to and get wisdom from. It's more to do with having understanding of life. It's all more to do with having knowledge. It's all more to do with having skills. In fact, actually, hakmah is probably closer to being educated well. To being a person who has a whole load of education in their lives. Someone who has many degrees, done an MA, keeps pursuing knowledge upon knowledge upon knowledge. And it's not always actually about having degrees. If you met these people, I've got to be careful what I say because there might be one or two in the church here. But they're kind of know-alls, aren't they? You know what? You can't beat them. You can't beat them. You talk about one thing and they go, oh, yeah, but did you know? And then you talk about another subject and they say, ah, but I know about that more than you do because this, that, and the other. And you just think, do you know what? They're just know-alls. They kind of know everything. But actually, there is a sense within our society that we just keep consuming. That's the word I'm looking for. Consuming knowledge upon knowledge upon knowledge. And you may remember I said to you that actually in our knowledge, we are so foolish a couple of weeks ago. We think we're so clever. We think we're so bright. But actually, the understanding that we have is like that to what God is. We have so little understanding. But, he says, I went on this journey of trying to fill my life with knowledge, but also looking at folly. At this point, no, I got some encouraging words for you. I was hoping to get to this point so I could just lift it a little. Because at this point, the writer, the teacher, actually says, but this is a good thing. Knowledge is a great thing. In fact, he becomes quite positive. He's pretty negative most of the time, but he's quite positive. And he says that I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. What he recognizes is that actually there is something worthwhile in understanding. There's something worthwhile in knowledge. So if anyone's sitting out there fed up with college or school or whatever it might be, let me encourage you that education is a good thing. I never liked education. I've been actually away at Moorlands College for a week. And, I enjoyed it to some extent. But I reminded myself, having sat in the classroom for a whole week, that this is not a place I really enjoy being. I'd rather be out and about doing stuff. But the teacher reminds us that actually knowledge is good. It brings light and understanding into our lives. So those of you who have parents, encourage your children to pursue education. I love the little saying in Ecclesiastes 2 verse 14 where he says, the wise have eyes in their head while the fools walk around in darkness. That probably, this is my translation, I think it'd be better translated as, the wise have their eyes open while the foolish keep their eyes closed. It's probably a slightly better translation. The eyes have their eyes open. They're looking to understand. Albert Einstein was a great person who wanted to understand how things work. They had their eyes open. You know when when you want to learn because you're looking at me. A few minutes ago, I almost stopped. I did this the other day, actually, when we were at Forest Row. There was something happened that drew everyone's attention, and I just stopped. And then in the silence, they just gradually all turned their eyes to me. And said, oh, you stopped talking. I said, I'm just waiting for you to come back. When you're back with me, we'll continue. And I almost did that to you just a minute ago, but I didn't. I thought I'd better keep going. But the wise have their eyes open. They want to learn. I know those of you who are learning, those with your eyes shut, maybe not learning as well as those with your eyes open at this point in time. Not always the case, but there is a possibility. Those who want to learn have their eyes open. Light floods into their lives. And he says, this is a good thing. So be encouraged for those who pursue understanding, those who pursue wisdom, those who pursue knowledge, be encouraged. May that light fill your lives and us in society. But do you sense a but? There is a but in verse 14b. He suddenly says, but. Having recognized that there is light in understanding and knowledge, he says, but. We face the same fate. Actually, the word is calamity. Quite like that word. We face the same calamity. If you think all your knowledge and understanding is going to give you security, think again. It isn't. It's not going to fill your life with security. In fact, actually, the fool and the wise person both face calamity in life. And that's so true, isn't it? Whether you're wise or whether you're a fool, and I'm not going to point out which is which, but whether you are either of those things, life throws calamity at you from time to time, doesn't it? And of course, he eventually says, the wise and the fool face death. Neither the wise and the fool, he says, will be remembered. Nothing remains of our wisdom or our foolishness. Both are a mist. Both are steam that is there for a moment and then it's gone and forgotten. And actually both, wise and fool, eventually face an end to their lives. So he kind of reached a point of positivity or optimism and then he plummets us back down into the place of pessimism. Okay, let's leave that to one side. So we've done pledge and we've done understanding and we've reached the same place that the whole lot is just a mist. It's just fleeting. It's kind of pointless. What about achievement? All the things that I could achieve in my life. Well, he goes into this one, having thought about these other two, and he goes straight in and he just says, so I hate life. What a statement. What a statement. I mean, if anyone came to me and said, Joth, I hate life, and some people do, I know it's going to be a difficult conversation. And this is the conclusion that he comes to. In fact, he comes to the conclusion before he actually does the research. He says, I hate life because all the work that is done under the sun is grievous to me. It hurts me. In fact, the Message puts it like this. This is this translation. I hate life. As far as I can see, what happens on earth is as bad is bad business. It's smoke and a spitting into the wind. Or Young's literal translation, which is quite helpful, but got an old feel to it. And I have hated life, for sad to me is the work that hath been done under the sun. For the whole is vanity and vexation of spirit. He thinks about all the achievements of his life. Perhaps you want to think about some of yours. How many letters you have after your name. How many certificates you got tucked away in some cupboard or in a drawer somewhere that you get out occasionally and think, oh, I'm not so bad after all. Do you do that? How high have you managed to climb up the promotion ladder? How well have you become known to others? Perhaps how many books you've read or even written. You know, whatever we have achieved in our lives, when it comes to Solomon, who we think most of this material flows from, almost, you know, I'm very confident that is the case. Whether he put it all together, we're not sure about, but certainly the material probably flowed from his wisdom. No one in his age, but probably since, has ever achieved as much as he has. You know, this man achieved so much. And yet, in his achievement, he comes to this conclusion that it's pointless. Life is pointless. I hate it. Everything that I have gained in life is going to be given to someone else. And when you read 1 Kings and hear the story of the kings that follow Solomon, it's prophecy. You know, all that he achieved and the peace of the nation and the great wealth that they had and his army and his navy and the temple and his palace and all the buildings that he built, all that wasted by sin and a rejection of God by those who inherited all those things. He worked so hard for them and yet he gave them to sons that just destroyed them. But their hearts been in the wrong place. He says, who can guarantee how your successors will use or value your achievements? He says, life is vanity, it's temporary. He says, life is unfair. He says, it's unjust. I worked so hard for all this, and I give it to a lazy so-and-so who can't be bothered to get up in the morning or doesn't go to the temple, doesn't worship God, doesn't love him. And he says it's unjust, it's unfair. Sorry, unjust, it's unfair. And he says this. He says, life is painful. God, it's so depressing, isn't it? He says, life is painful. All these days, their work is grief and pain. In fact, actually, he's talking about here both physical and mental anguish. And even at night, their minds do not rest. I just love that little kind of summary of life. You know, we work all day and we spend all night worrying about the work that we've done all day. It just doesn't stop. We achieve all this and yet we get no fulfillment. I was just saying, I just did a little search on sleep, which I'm always fascinated in because actually many of you know I'm not a great sleeper. Apparently, 63.1% of people are unhappy about the amount of sleep that they get. Anxiety may be a key factor in the quality of sleep. And 74% of people admit to worrying about getting a good night's sleep. 74%, three quarters of us worry about our sleep. And therefore we don't sleep because we're worrying about our sleep. One third of Britons now are sleeping for just 5 to 6 hours a night. In fact, actually recently, there's been a whole load of research on the BBC. There was a segment about sleep and how it's affecting our nation that we're not getting enough sleep. And so he says, at the end of all this, he says, so what's the point? What's the point? Well, I've run out of time, so I won't tell you what the point is. Oh, no. Give me just a few more minutes. And let me tell you, because he does conclude this little section, which is great. Because this is not just about pessimism. This is about looking realistically at life under the sun and coming to these conclusions. And however depressing or low it feels, then saying, well, what is the point? And he doesn't end there, you see. He doesn't end at that point. Because he actually says four things, if I can just quickly say these things in conclusion. He says, therefore, the point is this. Number one, needs to come up on the board, I think. Eat, drink, and be satisfied. Now, what I'm not suggesting, folks, that you go and get drunk after this sermon. I am not saying that. Could you just wave your hand to not acknowledge that you have heard that is what I'm not... Some of you are interpreting this sermon in the wrong manner. I don't know about you lot up there. I'm not so sure. He's not saying go and get drunk. What he's saying is that what God has given you, enjoy it. It is fleeting, but enjoy it. In fact, that's actually the next bit. He says, see, the hand of God is giving you these things. These things, these pleasures, this understanding, this achievement that you have are a gift from God. See it as a gift of God. So as you see it as a gift of God, rejoice in it. Celebrate in it. Be satisfied with it. Don't look at it and think, oh, I want a bigger one. Or, I want a newer one. Or, I want a greater one. I'm talking about my wife's. A wife. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. Don't look at what you have and think, I want more. Say, God bless you for all that I have. Go home and look at your family and say in your heart, God bless you for my family. Go look at your car when you get into your car after this service. However old and however ruined and how many new tires you need on it, it doesn't matter. Just say, God bless me. Thank you for giving me that car. Go look at your homes. Go look at your holidays. Whatever it is that you have, go and say thank you and be satisfied. Don't ask for more. Be satisfied. Be content. I mean, this is one of the main applications. And it's so, I mean, it sounds so, oh, I don't know, small, but it isn't small. It's big. This is big, people. We are not content people. Christians, we're not. We're like everyone else. We want more and more and more, and we chase after the wind. And the conclusion of the matter is, please be content with all that God has given you. Brian, Linda, be content in your retirement. I pray that for you, that you'll be content with your camper van. I hope you do get the new one, by the way. But, but be content with God, what God has given you. And just celebrate each day as it comes, because it is a gift of God. Number three, he says, those who please him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. To the person who pleases God, he gives wisdom, knowledge, and understanding and happiness in verse 26a. True wisdom, knowledge, and pleasure and achievement actually, what he's saying, actually only come from God. All that lasts, this is what he's saying, all that lasts only comes from God. Everything else is being built with paper. If you want to build a life with rock, if you want to build a life that will remain, then it's got to be God's life. It's got to be God's life. And it is God who brings wisdom, true wisdom. It is God that brings true knowledge and understanding. It is God that brings true happiness. Simha. That's the word. Simha. God's simha be in your life. And the fourth conclusion, he says, that in all this unjust world, the sinner will gather, will store, and then God will take it off them and give it to someone who is righteous. Now, I don't believe that to be true in this life, so don't be praying for your sinning neighbours that they might gather and store many items so that God might give it to you. That is not the application of this passage. What he's saying is that the sinner will gather and store and build up and build up. And all that they gather, just like the rich man who has the many, many barns that he puts all his stuff in, that God will eventually take his life away. And whatever worth in that storage of stuff, God will take and give to the righteous in the sense that the righteous are given eternity. It's not prosperity teaching. In the sense that the righteous will be given eternity. They will be given things that last forever. Which also reminds me, just as we end, that actually if we gather and store in that way, we sin. You know, a definition of sinning, if you want, is a gathering and storing the stuff that is not of God. Gather and store the stuff that is of God, but don't gather and store the stuff that isn't. Where your treasure is, your heart will also be, says Jesus. Build with the things of heaven, not with the things of earth. Amen. Let's pray.